This is an oral history interview with Gene Pitts on September 28, 1984, in Dixon, Montana. Well, Gene, the first thing I wanted to do is ask you what you were doing before you were smoke jumping.
Well, I just got out of college because of the war, and I joined the Navy in January of 42. But I wanted to be a pilot, and due to the fact that I didn't have enough credits, why I went to university for 2 quarters in from January to June of 42, and then in that time, why I took CPT under the Navy auspices, I guess you would say, they paid for it, and so I got my first flying out of the way there, plus getting credits, so then I could go on into further training. Then in middle of May, I decided I'd like to be a smoke jumper. I said, well, maybe that might help save my life and do some good for the country. So I wrote a letter to Commander Creighton in Seattle, and he wrote a real nice letter back, thought it would be a good idea. 7 of my buddies all went over in person and talked to him or some of his aides, and they were all turned down. So I felt pretty fortunate.
You were the one of the eight that...
Yes, and I didn't go. I just wrote a letter, and I was accepted. So I felt very good because it later came into quite a play in my life. So anyhow, I spent the summer then with the parachute outfit, and then when the fire season was over, then I went into active training.
So you had left college to train in the military?
Well, when the war started, or you know, the Pearl Harbor was December 7th, and I wanted to get in the Navy, and I was sitting milking the cows on my dad's dairy, and I heard this advertisement for Navy pilots. Gee, that sounded pretty good to me. So I went into Missoula and talked to the Navy, and they said, well, you've got to have 2 more quarters of credit. And I said, golly, I don't have it. So I went downtown to what was known as Heinrich's Jewelry and went in, and Mr. Heinrich wanted to sell me a good wristband. I said, well, I'm going in the Navy. I can get a good one a lot cheaper there than I can from you, so just give me the cheapest one you got. So his ears and so forth kind of lit up when I talked about going to the Navy, and he said, do you have any college credits? And I told him what my predicament was. I was going to be drafted January 7th, and...
Which would have put you in the infantry.
Yes, so I had to get into something right quick, which I was trying to get in, but I was trying to be a little bit selective. So he said, well, would you like to be a Navy pilot? And I said, well, that's what I want to be, but I haven't got enough credits. He said, just a minute. He said, I'm a civilian recruiter. So he went over and called the 7th Naval District of Seattle and told them what my predicament was. So they said, well, fine, get him right over here. Have him over here Monday morning. This was on a Saturday. And we'll give him the physical. If he passes, why, he'll be a pilot. If he, or he can go into pilot training. And if he flunks that and he's physically fit, why, he'll have to be a sailor. I said, fine. But I said, I don't have any money. No, he said, you look pretty honest. He said, I'll loan you enough to get your train ticket over and back and something to eat on.
Mrs. Heinrich, the jeweler?
Mr. Heinrich, the jeweler. So, by golly, he'd never seen me before, and he bought a round-trip ticket for me and gave me some spending money. So, I sent word home. My folks didn't have a phone in Hot Springs, so I sent word home that I wouldn't be home till sometime next week. I'd gone to join the Navy Air Corps. So there were 65 of us took the test. There was several from Montana went over, and there were only 4 of us that passed the test, the physical. The academic. And so 2 of us were from Montana, and the other from Idaho and Washington, so we felt pretty good. So anyway, I was sworn in. Well, then I notified my draft board that I was a Navy man and had them do it too, and so that was kind of the way I got started. And so then that summer, of course, I went in the parachute outfit.
Of the Navy?
Well, I was. It was in the regular force service, but I was. The Navy had given me a leave of absence for the summer.
I see. Just train.
So that I could go through the parachute, become a, you know, a firefighter for the summer,
I see.
Then that fall, then I would go into active training, which I did.
So, the Navy actually gave you leave to train with the smoke jumpers.
Right.
Uh
huh. Yes.
What drew you to the smoke jumpers? You said.
I don't know. I really don't know why, but I just had a feeling that it would be a good thing, and I got the chance to go in then, and the commander okayed it, which was really kind of unique. And I had no pull. I was certainly no politics or anything like that, because I didn't know him, and I don't think politics would have done much good at a time like that. So anyhow, I went in, and I learned the jumping procedures, and then when I became a Navy pilot, when I got shot down, I started to bail out, and I got hung up in the plane, got back in calmly and straightened out, and jumped and hit my head on the wing and dazed myself. And when I came to, I was slapping my face, and I made the chute, and I pulled the ripcord, the chute made one oscillation, and I hit the water. So that's why I say, I guess the good Lord was taking care of me. He kind of made things a little easy for me.
So you attribute that training in smoke jumping to really have saved your life?
Oh, very definitely. Because I would, you see, I started, I got shot down, and I started to be, I had to get away because we were over New Ireland. I was in New Ireland, New Britain, in the South Pacific, and the Japs were killing practically every pilot they would take and cut the stomach and tie them to a tree and let the ants eat them or cut their other vital organs and their sex organs out and then let the ants kill them. They had different missionaries that came back and made reports on this, what was going on. So we all were told, and we believed it, that we would save our bullet for ourselves. We wouldn't let them take us captive. So I had to glide out to sea. And I was somewhere around 2,000, 2,500 feet, and I tried to bail out, and the wind was so hard that I kind of got hooked up, so I just took a second and got unhooked. But I knew every move had a count, and when I dove out, I dove for the tail, but I still hit the wing, because the wing came back underneath quite a ways. And it was in a F-6F Hellcat fighter plane, and so I bailed out, and when it dazed me, I don't know if you say knocked me out, but anyhow, when I come to, I was slapping my face, and then I pulled the ripcord, and then I made this one oscillation. It hit and popped me, and I went up in the air. When I come down, I came into the water feet first, of course. So I got up and got into my life raft eventually, swallowed a little salt water and did a little vomiting, but that was all right.
You had a life raft that was with you?
Yeah, it was tied into my backpack.
Let's see.
And so my partner that I'd been flying with, he couldn't figure out what darn fool kept hollering that he was shot down and to watch out. And but I'd never use my name, because all I could use was my number. And that was military orders. So anyhow, all of a sudden he looked down, and there he saw the chute, and about that time, he saw the plane hit, and then he saw the chute, and then I hit the water. He couldn't figure it all out, and so then he called our base, and they sent a PT boat out, and it got out there in about an hour and a half, picked me up, and they had a hard time finding me. They sent out a big bunch of planes to fly cover, because we were in a pretty hot area, but they had a hard time seeing me, and I had my orange cover over the top of my head, and I was waving it around, and I just felt, I thought I was plumb secure. I thought everybody was just seeing me down there. I could see all them real well, and here come to find out they was having an awful time spotting me. They keep losing me. Well, then the PT boat just barely spotted me, and then they come up alongside, and I grabbed a hold of the rope ladder that they threw down to me, and I started to crawl up, and a fella screamed at me, and I jumped, and I landed on my stomach and slid on the deck, and up, and I said, "What the devil was that for?" He said, "You just pulled your foot out of a shark's mouth."
Gee.
Yeah, it was I kind of looked at him, and I was still on my stomach, and I looked back over the, I scooted over, looked over the edge, and there was a school of a great big shark circling around under the PT boat. He said it rolled over on its back. That's why they have to do it, you know, to get you. They can't go from the front, so they have to roll on their back. And he said he just had my foot in his mouth, and I jerked it out when he screamed at me. So that's why I say I feel I owe a lot to the parachute outfit and to the fact that the commander let me learn to, in other words, to save myself, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, before we leave that incident, let me ask you, what you were you fleeing on an island that was being occupied or something? Or
well, we were, I started out in the New Hebrides, and then we moved up to Guadalcanal. Then we went to the Russell Islands, and I was on what was known at that time as Green Island. That's just below the Solomon Islands. And we were just 1 or 2 degrees off the equator.
So, and were you flying into a hot area or out?
Well, yeah, New Ireland and New Britain were two big islands, and they weren't secured yet. In fact, six of my flying mates there within a week were all shot down by anti-aircraft and so forth. We were in doing a lot of strafing of their ports and so forth.
Is that what you're doing? Were you?
Yes, I had, in fact, maybe you've heard of Major Boeington. Did you ever hear of him?
No.
He was one of the great aces of World War II, and he got shot down about a month or so before I did. He, I think it was 44 Jap planes he had to his credit, and he got shot down by the same shore installation that I did. I didn't realize it when I came over, and then later they told me that we were both shot down at the same very obviously by the same gunnery group. But anyhow, yes, we were going along through there. I always think back that I saw this bunch of nice fat cattle up on this ridge, and I came back and told the commander, I said, gee, they had a big herd of cattle. And I flew back and forth enjoying watching, being an old cowman from Montana. Oh, he gave me the devil. He said, well, you're supposed to kill them. He said, why didn't you go down and strafe them? He said, that's their food. I didn't think about it. To me, it was just a nice bunch of cattle down there.
When you first started training in smoke jumping, were you at the 9 mile base?
Right, yes.
What were your first impressions when you got there, the outfit?
Well, I don't know. It was just it was an old CC camp, and it pretty rugged. I think the thing that kind of amused me more than anything, they had a whole bunch of CC guys there. That they were a bunch of New Yorkers and New Jerseyites that came in, and they were training kind of for a ground crew, and they were obviously ignorant and tenderfoot. They would wait, and the bear would come in at night to the garbage can, and then they'd circle this garbage disposal with a bear inside, and hold hands trying to, they're going to capture that bear. About three times we'd see them bear come through them and just knock a couple of guys just cattywampus, you know, as they go through their legs. And it's a wonder that some of them didn't swat them or something. But I would, you know, all of us natives, we had more respect, but you couldn't tell them anything. They just, that was just like a big dog, I guess, or something to them.
They wanted to capture it?
Yeah.
For what purpose?
Oh, they thought they could make, actually, I guess these that they were fooling with were more cubs, and they thought they could capture them and have them for a pet. Yeah, they had big ideas. They were going to capture them with their hands. Even a yearling bear is, he might not be too big, but he's a lot stronger than I want to play with. So, no, it, I didn't realize it till I was reading the smoke jumping book that I bought down here that how bad a shape we were. They had taken all the supplies. We just got a few scraggling supplies from what was left over from what the military had confiscated, because at that time, while the war had just started, and there was such a drastic shortage of food stuff and materials and everything, and we were a lot sadder shape than I had any idea of when there. I didn't know it till now, actually, till this summer when we had our reunion, and that we were in such a bad shape for materials and all type. But no, it was, well, like, we did a little training, mostly told what to do, and then a few, they had a little scaffold out there about 20 feet high, and I had a relative die, so I went home for about 3 days to the funeral. I came back, they had their practice on that scaffold while I was gone, and the day I got back, well, they were all going up to jump out of the airplane, so for my first jump off anything was out of an airplane.
Gee.
I looked out of there and I said, "You damn fool." I can remember them words, I'll never forget them, and looked down at them little big trees, just looked like little specks, you know, from up there, and then to jump out of a plane, you know, just beyond all common sense.
Had they given you, they must have given you some training. You missed the scaffold jump, but you must have had some training on your equipment and stuff like that, on rolls.
Well, they told us what to do, but I hadn't done any of it because I missed those days of training, so I had nothing other than just the fact they told me when I landed not to stand up to roll, and it, and I rolled.
So you did.
Yeah, it was my second or third jump. The kid with me, he tried to stand up and broke his back. So, yeah, we had, I don't know, two or three broken backs out here from the way we landed. We were the first ones to use the slotted chutes. Our parachute jumper, Frank Derry, and his brother had Frank and Shed, I believe was his name. Frank was our instructor. And anyhow, they made this slotted chute, and it came down slower than the old Eagle chute did. And you had a lot more maneuverability, but it was still like driving a Model T compared to a Cadillac today. I watched the jumper down at Missoula jump the other night at the fair. And golly, them guys just go all over. We didn't have anything like that. We just maneuvered a little bit, and we thought we were doing a whole big thing. But there were only, well, there was 33 in our group, and only five had had any experience. The rest of them had gone to the service. And Earl Cooley was in my group, and then Jack Nash, he's the oldest smoke jumper alive today. He's 80 years old, and he started the same time I did. I didn't realize just how old-fashioned or something I am, because when I went to the, we were lined up getting our tickets and registering down at the smoke jumpers and
convention.
Yeah, and golly, these guys would come by and old gray-haired and kind of stooped over, and I'd look, tell the wife, "See what year they got on their tag?" And she'd say, 47, 50, 51, and I was ready to turn around and go home. I didn't know how to be as old as them guys were. Yeah. I only saw one 1941, and I didn't see any 1942s, of which I was a class of, till we got eating. This one fellow recognized me and come over, and then there were six of us got together then and had our picture taken in the group. I got quite a kick out of it. I'm the only one that's not retired yet. I haven't got enough sense, I guess, to do that. But, yeah, I felt pretty honored, though, that old Jack Nash was there, and the oldest, most celebrated jumper, and then Earl Cooley, of course, made the first jump, and he was in my group, so that was two of the five. And then Fred Brower, I don't know what happened to him. Nobody seemed to know. He was one of our main leaders, and he was in that big fire at Helena when those fellows got killed. He was one of the few that got out. They tried to tell him to dig in, you know, in the cliffs there, and they, a lot of them ran and jumped off of the rocks and killed themselves and all kinds of things. But anyhow, there were just the six of us that showed up down there, so I don't know what's left out of our 33.
When you first got to the camp, you said one thing was that there were a lot of tenderfoot from back east, people from New Jersey and New York.
Yes.
And they were training to be ground crew.
Yes, they were in the, well, I guess you, some of them were CC guys, and others were just, but they were all working for the ground crew, or on the ground crew force.
as far as the smoke jumper crew, there were some of these professional ones that you're talking about. Who else? What other types of crew members were there? Who's in your Newman class?
What do you mean? I don't quite follow you.
pardon me. The people you mentioned, Earl Cooley and Fred Bauer.
Brower, yeah.
Bauer, Ian, Jack Nash. Were they, was that their first year? Or were
no, they, it was Nash's, but the other two had been there. Cooley made the first jump made for the, in this firefighting group. And that was in 1940, so, see, they made the first jump, I think it was like August 11th of 1940. And then there, I don't know how many were there, were in 41, but it still wasn't very big. We were the big crew at 33 and 42, so you see, we still were, it was really just getting kicked off.
What were some of the other fellows, what were their backgrounds?
Well, some of them were, most of them, I think, were just kids, like myself. I know the one lad was from the Bitterroot, and then there were some of the, there were, I can remember about four of the football players, not from Missoula Sentinel. And then one fella came in, I can't remember his name, he was a one of the top professional boxer of the Northwest. And the night before our first jump, he paced all night, and about 5 o'clock, he put his pack on his back and took off for town. Yeah, that was too much for him. He could get in the ring and fight somebody, but that was too much for him to try to jump out of an airplane.
Okay. Had many of these people had any firefighting experience?
No. See, there were only 5 experienced people in the crew.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of the war?
Right, yeah. The rest of them had all taken off. And a lot of them, well, when I was down in the South Pacific, I went in on Bougainville, where, and I went in where they were packing chutes, and there were about 5 fellas that all knew me, and they were all people some of them had jumped with, and a couple of them had been riggers here at for us at that time. But 5 of them were in this, they were all packing chutes, so a lot of these fellas took off and went that way. I'm the only one that I know of in the group that went in that became a pilot.
Some of them did end up packing chutes.
Oh, yeah, they were, Sarah, all those fellows that had any experience there went into the Army, Navy, or something of that type, and were packing chutes and working in that line.
They weren't jumping, though?
Well, no, there didn't seem to be many went into jumping. They went into the pack, into the rigging outfit, you know, and I suppose there were some to jump, but I don't know who they were. Mm-hmm. I tell you, at that time, things were in such an uproar. Like I say, we were short of stuff. We were all watching the war news, and we didn't have much comradeship. It was we were all in there just to do a job and get out. And
in the smoke jumpers.
Yeah, in the smoke jumpers. We worked together. We were close in a sense, but you know, just for 3 months, you don't get that much closeness with the fellas, and then we would be spread out with fires and different things coming up, so we didn't really, we didn't have that much association with each other.
Now, did all of you leave after that 3 months? Were you all drafted?
I have no idea.
But that's how long you were there.
That's how long I was there. It was the 3 months. I do know that several of them did leave then, you know, but how many of those 33 went on, I really never knew. Well, as you said, what you know that I didn't know is Jack Cooley apparently stayed there with the group and help train through the war then. So what the other did, I really don't know.
Yeah, I guess the fellows that stayed on ended up being the trainers, and the rest ended up going in the service.
I think that's what happened to the majority of them. Hmm. Yeah, they all put themselves into something. They all went into a specialty. They were a pretty fine group. Thing that I enjoyed, I think, down, I got to looking, I don't know how many did end up in our smoke jumper convention. It was over 1,000. That I know, maybe, do you ever hear the number?
Yeah, it was, I didn't hear a final count, but it was over 1,000.
Yeah, I knew there was 975 registered, and there was still a lot coming in, so I didn't know how much it went over. But anyhow, as I started to say, the wife and I were sitting there and visiting, and with another couple, we got to looking around, and There were very few fellows of all ages that were out of condition. They were pretty husky, pretty healthy-looking group of people. Hmm. I was quite proud of them, to say the least. And another thing, they had beer all over. They had hard drinks. You could have anything you wanted. And by golly, I never saw a man there that was really, you know, gone with it. Everybody was having a drink, but it was very sociable. It wasn't a drunken party by any means.
In your crew, in that 3 months' time, did you run into much heavy drinking? Or?
We didn't get away from base. Mm-hmm. Now, we only got away one night, and we were at Cedar Lake, and we went down to the, they had had a rain over the whole area, so they let us out for the night, went to a dance. And I danced with this one girl a couple of three times, and there was a big fellow there that was from the dude ranch that she was staying at, and he kind of took a dislike to me, and I went outside for a breath of air by myself, and I thought a mule kicked me. They hit me in the nose and knocked me back, and I come up fighting, and here it turned out to be him. He was going to show off to the girls, but we were all in pretty good shape. We were training pretty hard every day, you know, and running and doing things. We were in real good physical condition. So anyhow, when we got through, he was cut up pretty good, and I still have a deviated septum from getting poked in the nose. But other than that, but the fellows they weren't a drinking group. They, you know, they drink, but it was sociable drinking. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. There wasn't a, and as I say, even now, seeing these fellows, they certainly didn't get carried away to the extreme that they lost their facilities, that I could tell.
Mm-hmm. So there's 33 in that crew, and you didn't really have a chance to get to know each other all that well.
Well, some of them might have, but I was a stranger coming from a different area, so I didn't have any buddies to go in there with. I was walked in plumb cold. And
were some of these fellows from out of state? And
you know, I don't know where they were from. I just know, I think most of them were state fellows. I don't know of any of them. There was one Indian in there, quite heavy Indian, they all laugh about. He did the barbering for a lot of the fellas. I don't remember whether he cut my hair or not. I'd forgot all about that. They were laughing and talking about him being the barber. But I don't even remember what his name was. They couldn't remember his name.
Most of these fellas were pretty young, you say.
Yes, I would say most of us run from 20, from about 19 to about 24. This one fellow that I met here and is living in Missoula now, he was 18.
And little, no smoke or no firefighting experience?
No.
Pretty much.
Yeah, there was none of them. Yeah, these fellows, they had an awful time teaching us how to use a compass to keep from getting lost and grubbing lines and so forth and what to do. But fortunately, they weren't. It was a wet season, so we didn't get many big fires that year. They, like they said, if it had been a hot season, Forest would have been in bad shape. Mm-hmm. Of course, look at today, right now, they got all kinds of help, and the wind and the fires are just raising havoc over the state, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are.
So, yeah.
Huh. So this was, just thinking about that, the first couple of years, there weren't that very many, and this was the first fairly sizable crew.
Right. Then it built on up to where, I don't know, what do they do have? Maybe you know now. They've got several hundred in the that are smoke jumpers that are stationed over the United States and so forth. Yeah, another thing that I was real proud of, in 1971, my son Gary went in as a smoke jumper, and he jumped in for two seasons.
You think the fact that you had been in had anything?
I think it did. Yeah, I think it quite definitely did. Yeah, he was a smoke jumper, and then I was a pilot, and then the fellow who gave me my CPT test as whether I got my license or not, He was up in Havre, and Gary went up there about 4 years ago, and by golly, the fellow was still giving tests and checked in. He got his pilot license from the same man. Yeah, it's kind of an odd thing, but I think it had quite a bit to do.
You must have spoke fairly highly of the smoke jumpers.
Oh, we've always been real proud of it, yes.
How'd you think the training was?
Well, we didn't get to, they didn't have too much to give training, and at that time they didn't have the knowledge to draw from to give us training, and I don't think they had the equipment to train us with. All that we did was learn how to use the Pulaski and the shovel and use our compasses and teach us how to get out of the hills, after you get through fighting that fire back in the wilderness, you got to get out of there. But much more training, they didn't give us all that much. And then a lot of it was just physical training.
What kind of physical training?
Oh, we just did a lot of calisthenics and some running. I was in excellent condition when I went in, so it didn't make much difference. Just a little bragging, but I had been a college runner when I went in, and then all last spring while I was at the university, I used to run from the college out to, where Sentinel High School is. Well, that's basically where our airstrip was at that time, and I'd run out there every day and run back. I could beat anything they had going to the university down here in the distance at that time. Well, then that summer, through the training, when I went in the fall, there had been 10,000 fellas gone through this, what they call the back test. They put a third of your weight on your back, and then you take a step test for 5 minutes. And I passed the second highest that they'd ever had to take the test. A good many of the fellas couldn't finish the test, and they asked me, they said, could you do it again? I said, oh, yeah, and they thought I was kidding, but I wasn't even puffing. But it was just a constant good training, and we had good food, you know.
When was that you took this step test?
Shortly after I got out of the parachute outfit, when I went into active training in the Navy then.
Oh, I see.
That was down at St. Mary's, California.
Because they did not have the step test in firefighting.
No, they didn't. We didn't have any tests like that. No, we just took it as a regular physical.
So is that something they picked up from the military?
No, the military gave. This was in the Navy that I took the back test, the step test.
I just wonder if now the firefighters have to take a step test.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, they must have borrowed that from the military then.
It's possible, because we didn't take anything like that.
Just a basic
physical? Just a basic physical, yes.
And then you do calisthenics. Do they have any special equipment to train you physically?
No.
They didn't have... I know at later time they had something they called the rack where...
No.
You didn't have that at that time.
No, we just get out and do our jumps and our squats and our push-ups and things of that nature that you can do out here, anybody can do on their own. We just did it in a unison test, or in a unison group, you know.
Do you think that put people in adequate shape that weren't in shape beforehand?
Well, I tell you, I think most everybody they had in there were in pretty darn good condition when they come in. Like I say, they were ex-athletes, they were young fellows, and I can't think of one of them that really wasn't pretty darn good condition when they came in there.
Did you ever talk to them and get a sense of what brought them in smoke jumping?
No, I haven't. No, I don't. At that time, I was quiet, bashful, and I didn't do much talking. Didn't ask many questions.
Did you ever go on a fire jump?
Yes. Yeah, but I just fortunate they were small fire. Just two of us would jump on them.
How was the experience of jumping after that first jump? How did you find it?
I was always scared. Yeah, our instructor, he'd had somewhere close to 1,000 jumps, and they said he had to get about half loaded before he would be able to relax to go jump. It was just, he didn't like to jump, but he did it. That was what he knew and what he was good at. Well, that summer, the Army had that bunch of parachute outfit over at, a big outfit at Helena, and they were breaking legs and backs. They had an awful time, so he took three of his top jumpers and himself and went over and spent a week showing them how to jump properly. And they tell me that the military still calls on the parachute outfit constantly for information, new techniques and methods and that, because, well, of course, they're a specialist in that group, in that field. So the military and the Forest Service do work pretty close together, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you went in the military, were you given any training in jumping there?
No. Mm-hmm. One instructor tried to tell me that you always jump for the leading edge of the plane, or on the wing on the plane when you jump, so he wouldn't hit the tail. And I told him, I said, you want to jump for that tail as hard as you can jump, because you're going to come down, you're going to hit the wing and knock yourself out. And he ridiculed me there, and I said, well, sir, I've jumped. I've been trained by the Forest Service. That didn't go over at all, so I shut up, and I never, from that time on, ever offered any expertise, you know. And, but as it was, I did jump for the tail hard as I could, and I knocked myself out. So I proved beyond doubt to myself that I was right, but nobody else was interested in it, so.
So you followed his instructions?
No, no. I followed the Forest Service instruction. I still dazed myself. If I'd have followed his instructions, I'd have probably been worse off yet.
Do you think there were some injuries as a result of his instructions?
Well, you'd never know. You know, these fellas, so many of them never got out of their planes. Well, like I say, there were seven of us shot down, and I was the only one to get out alive. And that just in a short period in my one group. And there was only about 40 of us in the group to start with. No, there was a lot of bad things went on, but they had so few people with experience. And they, it's like him, he was just talking off the top of his head. I listened to him, and I just tuned him out. I wouldn't even listen to his instructions, because it was all backward to what I learned, and I had jumped several times, so I felt like I had more knowledge than what he was putting out, and he wasn't that much older than I was, so I just knew these boys up here were far advanced to what those people were.
Is there anything else specifically that he said that you knew was...
I don't remember. It's too long ago. That was just the one thing that stuck in my mind. And then, when I jumped, I got dazed, and so it never left my mind, you might say. Mm-hmm. Like I say, he was talking and telling a lot of stuff, but I just kind of tuned him out. I didn't listen to him.
How many jumps did you actually make then in smoke jumping practice jumps?
Oh, I think I had 8 practice and those 4 jumps on fires.
Mm-hmm. The fires were pretty small.
Yeah, they were just spot fires. We caught them early.
2 man?
Yeah. So we didn't have much to do. Mm-hmm. Like I say, we were very fortunate we didn't, because we had to cover quite a territory.
At that time, do you think the smoke jumpers was a pretty good outfit? Or?
Oh, I was just real happy to be in them. They were a real fine bunch of men, and they did the best they knew how at that time with what they had to do with. And I knew no different, but I still respect whatever went on there, because they worked for the best they had with what they had to do with.
What was Frank Derry like? What did you think of him?
Well, I was never around Frank. Frank was quite a bit older, and he'd come out and tell us what to do, and then he'd leave. And I was never around a socialite. I never socialized with a man whatsoever.
He was probably working at the loft and designing
things. He did, and he had his own. He didn't live on the base with us. So I don't even really know where he lived, but he'd come up and give us an instruction, and he'd be gone again. So.
Do you have any impressions of him just from when he came and gave me instructions?
No, other than the fact he seemed to be very knowledgeable, and we had a high respect for him. We worked, did our darndest to please him and to learn what we could from him. He was kind of a man that impressed you.
What about Earl Cooley?
Well, Earl was a little older, and he did his thing, and we were the pups, I guess, just kind of learning. So we didn't say much. We were just kind of did what we were told. And in those times, people didn't do much talking. You just listened and learned, and they told you if you was doing something wrong. And other than that, we didn't have too much communication.
Mm-hmm. You looked up to these guys.
Oh yes, yeah, they were all experienced fellows, and they looked like. And Earl was older than I was, and the other fellows were older, so I respected them. We were taught. Well, I was taught that at home, and I always. The fellows were all skilled in their field, and I didn't know anything about it, so I listened to everything there was to be listened to.
You said one fellow did pack up before his first jump and took off. Is there anybody else that had problems with staying there?
No, everybody else seemed to be fit in very well. No, it was a real good group. They worked hard. And it's one thing that was kind of interesting was this, I can't think of his name either, and I knew it. I was talking about him here a while back. He was the one who broke his back with the same jump I jumped. And then after the war, he became a firefighter for the Missoula Fire Department. They had an old bowling alley out at the southeast corner of town, and it burnt quite a few years ago, and he was in there trying to help him, and a timber come down and killed him. But anyhow, and then another lad got his back broken. I can't remember which one of them was. Their mother came up to see the lake then. This was both at 9 Mile, and then later on, while they came up to watch this jump, and that really wasn't that dangerous, that it was just kind of freak accidents. And so they jumped several of them, and I was standing down in the group. I didn't get to jump that day, and I got with this one fella. He didn't snap his static line in the airplane like you're supposed to, and he free fell, and he was down to about 1,000 feet. People were hollering and screaming at him. Finally, he opened his chute, made a good landing. We always kind of laughed. Here they was trying to impress him, and here he didn't hook his the static line to open his ripcord.
This was a demonstration?
It was a demonstration.
And it happened at Sealy Lake?
Yes.
Who is it for?
Well, we had to make the practice jumps, and it was just a practice jump, but they made it a special occasion so that, several of the parents came up. They called it Parents' Day, and so this mother was there along with some other parents, and then here this one fellow darn near got killed. No, it's like at Sealy Lake, they had some of the big wigs out of Washington, D.C., and so some of us were to jump that day, and the first two fellas jumped, and the wind was blowing pretty hard. And they tried to land. They come down on the one edge of the airstrip, but the wind carried them across and into the rocks and into the poles, and they had to take both them to the hospital. And I was the third one to jump. And so I jumped quite a ways back from the strip to counteract the wind drift. I come down. There was a big old Widowmaker snag. It was over 100 feet tall. And I was coming down on top of it, and right at the last second, I crawled up the shroud line there, and I jerked it just enough that it didn't go over the top, but the silk rubbed along the top of that black, it was a fire-killed one, and there was still ashes on the top of the snag, and by golly, I had black all over that one side of my chute. But I landed all right. I landed on a strip, and made a good jump out of it. But boy, that was the last jump. They called it off then. And here these guys had come out from D.C. to see this demonstration.
Okay. Do you have any idea who these guys from D.C. were?
No, they were, they just called them that they had come out, made a, this was a special demonstration for them.
Was it sort of to sell the smoke jumping idea to
them? Right, uh-huh, yeah. I have an idea they were probably the top Forest Service brass out of D.C., but I don't know. They just told us that they were the, some of the top brass out of D.C., and we were to put on a good demonstration, but like I say, I was the third in the final.
So you went right out of smoke jumping, then right into maybe as a pilot then.
Right. Yeah.
How many years were you in?
Oh, I had 30, let's see, what was it, about 40 months in the military then.
Did you, had to jump that one time?
Just the one time, yes.
Have you ever jumped since then?
Nope. Yeah, it looks, I enjoyed it, I tell you. The opening of the chute, till it opened, scares the deckens out of me. As soon as it opens and then I'm sailing down, I just thoroughly love it. I remember about my second jump by at 9 Mile. There was a hot day and these, you have your heat inversion. And I got on one of these inversions, and I went back up a ways, and I'd float around, and I'd get back, I'd drop, and I'd get on it and go back up. It seemed to me like I stayed there 5 to 10 minutes. I don't know how long I was, but I had more fun playing on that. The only time I ever got into something like that, where I could really have some fun. But I
you were just saying before we ended that side that you really enjoyed the jumping.
Well, I did, but I was going to tell you, too, something that the jumping did for me that was kind of unique, maybe just to me, but I never made a bad landing with an airplane. When I took my, I went all through my military training. These fellows, when they'd ride with me, they'd try to get me to make a bad landing so I'd know how to recover from a bad landing. But I knew where the ground was, and I just greased that airplane in there. I just, all through my flying time, I had exceptional good luck, I guess you would call it, with landing an airplane. I just didn't come in with bounces. I'd come in to make a three-point landing, and that was it. Or if I wanted to make a wheel landing, it didn't matter. I could make a real good wheel landing. They'd get so, they'd say, well, you've got to make a bad landing because you're going to make them, and then you won't know how to recover from them. But by golly, I just didn't make bad landings. And I know it was from the jumping because in jumping you got to know where that ground is.
Meaning you got to know, you got to have some pretty good idea of.
You bet, because you know have to have your legs bent and hit right and be able to make your roll and so forth. And if you don't, well, then you're going to be into trouble. And that's what, where these boys get hurt.
So is part of what you're saying is you had a good sense of distance when you're
very good
coming down. You could just sort of feel when you.
Well, you look at an old bird when he comes, hovers and comes down to land. He knows where that object is, and that's just what, through the jumping, I learned that. Mm-hmm. Now, I never did talk to any of the other boys because I don't know of any of them that flew. It was in the parachute outfit, but except my son. Now, he said he never made any bad landings. That he always had a very good goal. Now, whether we were just kind of unique in that or whether it affected everybody that way, but... it was real good training. Like I say, it saved my life, and I never had any troubles. I saw one kid land when I was in Florida. They had one of these great big Quonset huts. I don't know. It looked like it was 40, 50 feet high. And I was walking along on the opposite side where he was landing, and he bounced so high when he touched down. He bounced clear up to where I saw his whole airplane. And then he went down and finally landed, and then he ground looped and mashed the plane all up. You just see that constantly. These guys would just make terrible landings. I mean, they would bounce sometimes 100 to 150 feet in the air. And I could just come in and just, as they say, grease it in. And it wasn't that I was that smart or anything. It just was the background I had for it.
Hmm. Gee. So in two big ways that really gave you...
It was tremendous to me.
Hmm. You think any other...
way that it benefited you, or?
Oh, not particularly. I think it just the fact it gave me a lot of confidence through my flying and the background. And like we had a little thing that I do look back, it's not particularly that helped me that much. It's interesting to see the old Ford Tri-Motor down here and the Travel Air. They're objects of quite the collector's item now. We got to fly in those. It, the pilots that were flying them were some of the best pilots, and I'm sure that didn't hurt me. I didn't realize, but these fellows were so cool and calm, and you know, they were real pilots, because the things they did, the places they had to get in with that old equipment, well, it was phenomenal now that I look back at it.
So they were real skilled.
Yeah, they were skilled. Bob and Dick Johnson, and then Hughes. He was the one that checked out. I saw him down at the smoke jumper, and then when, but we were at the banquet, and time when the banquet was over, why he disappeared, and I never did catch up with him. He was the one that checked me out, checked my son out, and for our license, and he flew some of our jump flights for us, as well as Bob and Dick Johnson. Of course, they're all pretty legendary people.
Other than that one fellow that broke his back, did you have any other injuries? Seriously?
There were just two broken backs, yeah. That's all that that I can recall.
And were those fellows pretty much washed up from smoke jumping then?
Well, yeah, they were out for the season. And then probably the time they healed up, they both would have gone into the military. Well, I know the one did, the one that jumped with me. I know he went in. They weren't bad breaks, they were probably fracture of vertebrae, you know, but it would knock them out for the time.
So all in all, it was pretty much an important experience in terms of your training, for that jump in the military.
Very much so.
Yeah. Very, the guys, you liked the people in the crew, but you didn't get to know them that well.
No. No, I didn't. We didn't get to go out, you know, at the time year-round. And I tell you, all my life I bumped from one thing to another. Like when I was in the military, I was a replacement. And I was in five different squadrons. And so I didn't, you don't make the, have the comradeship that you do if you're in one group and stay steady there. You bounce around all the time and you just, you meet people, but you, at that time, we never knew from day to day how long we was going to be alive, and so you, I guess you just didn't think about those things at that time that way.
And when you're in the jumpers, you say it was pretty confused times because you were looking at the news and wondering what was going to happen next.
Right. And yeah.
So it wasn't any sense. You didn't have any. Was everybody pretty much looking forward to when they were going to be in the service?
Yes. Yes, and you knew, I mean, it wasn't, there was no tomorrow as far as the jumping. We knew that we wouldn't be there next season. We had no intention of being there. And so we were there doing a job and ready to go on to the big job. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I felt, and I think it's pretty much the way they felt.
Were those frightening times at all?
No, I really, I look at it all through my military. I'd hear guys get berserk and that, but I never did get particularly frightened. I just accepted it and went on. And if I was here, I was going to do the best I could, and if something happened, well, I guess it wouldn't make any difference. So I saved my money in the service and sent it home to buy a ranch. And I never felt down. I don't feel I was near the pessimist that a lot of people were in the service. You know, you just like in your daily life, you see some people are always down and sad, others aren't. And I just never let myself dwell on those things.
Well, I think we pretty well covered it there. sure appreciate you coming over for an interview.
Well, I appreciate being interviewed. Okay,
see
thank you.
Later, Gene.
Yeah.